its current state, you're listening to 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. On this date, 45 years ago, America heard the awful news that civil rights pioneer Martin Luther King Jr. had been murdered in Memphis, Tennessee. To the world, King was an icon of equality and justice. His family and friends, of course, saw something more. One of Dr. King's closest friends was William G. Anderson. Anderson is an osteopathic surgeon with Michigan State University who practices in Detroit. In 1961, Anderson lived in Albany, Georgia, where he started what came to be known as the Albany Movement, one of the first successful organized protests of the era. Dr. Anderson told Current State's Kevin Lavery about how he came to meet and befriend Dr. Martin Luther King.
The way that happened, it is somewhat prophetic the way it happened, in that I met this lady who I eventually married, or I should say she eventually married me to my good fortune. She lived in Atlanta. She had a brother who was a classmate and a close friend of Martin Luther King Jr. Now, mind you, I'm not talking about the Right Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I'm talking about M.L. King, high school student. My brother-in-law and Martin Luther King Jr. were the best of friends and both aspiring ministers. So when I married this lady, or she married me, then I got introduced to him as he was a student and I was a student.
Who was the Martin Luther King Jr. you knew as a colleague and a friend that the world did not know?
Martin, because of his relationship with my brother-in-law, spent as much time at my mother-in-law's home, and incidentally, I did stay at with my mother-in-law when I got married because I could not afford anything for myself, and I had a wonderful mother-in-law, by the way. But Martin would spend as much time at our home, her home, as at his own home, and he and my brother-in-law would practice that preaching. I describe it on several occasions as practicing that preaching ad nauseum. And I would tell him, why don't you just shut up? It was annoying. It's sort of like listening to a kid learn how to play a violin. How annoying can that be? Well, anyway, I did not come to fully appreciate how he was developing. And as he's matured and his preaching practicing became less and less annoying, and more intriguing and inviting and invigorating.
If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over there. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right.
You don't realize that it's history when you're in the middle of it. And suddenly you realize that you've helped set in motion things that are bigger than yourself.
Yes, it's sort of like in one of the demonstrations, even Dr. King was not always certain that he would have the masses of people with him. And you're not thinking about history, right? You're not thinking about making history. You're thinking about how we can bring about this little change that we want. In Montgomery, it was about riding on a bus. In Albany, it was about getting the right to vote. But you don't think that this is part of a bigger picture that will literally changed the nation.
He stayed in your home for a while. Was he a good roommate?
We all admired and revered Martin Luther King Jr. He was, even though others might not have perceived him as such, many of us early on recognized him as the Messiah. And when he came to stay at our home, even my children who were teens and sub-teens were eager to give up their bedroom, give up a place at the table for him. So we had a small two-bedroom house. And of course, my wife and I gave up our bed, and there was no such thing as a king-size bed or queen-size bed. It was just a double bed. We gave up our bed for him. Martin was a man who was not demanding. In other words, he did not require a T-bone steak, filet mignon, and escargot. No, no, no. When he would come into my house, he and Abernathy both would go right to the kitchen, which was the place where people would congregate, and start lifting the covers off of pots to get some greens and peas and baked ham or fried chicken or whatever was there. They did not require, neither one, they did not demand any special attention. They came in and just joined with the other people.
So you and your wife and all the people affected in Albany began to realize that you had an obligation to break the law when the law was unjust.
That's correct. We knew we were breaking the law, demonstrating, protesting, picketing, when the law says you can't do that. You cannot do that without a permit. In other words, you cannot, they call it parade. You cannot parade without a permit, and they consider that a parade. And yes, and we also knew that there was not just a risk, but the reality of, if you do this, you're going to jail. Even then, I mean, it was heartening to me to see how many people were willing to do that on faith. And they sang, and they prayed, and they sang the songs of freedom that emanated from those jails. To hear those songs, nothing like it. Nothing like it.
Do you recall which songs?
Oh, freedom. Before I be a slave, I'll be dead and in my grave. There were a lot of songs like that.
Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom over me. And before I'd be a slave, I'd be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free.
Everybody. Do you remember the night Martin Luther King Jr. was killed? Certainly you do, but what was that for you?
That night, I turned on the television and I went to call him to urge him to come to Detroit to talk to some of these people who had been his supporters for years. But that night, I called his wife to try to get to him. And while I was on the phone talking to her, she said, "Wait a minute, Andy. Something has happened to Martin." She left the phone and never came back. I had the TV on, and of course, in a matter of minutes, they announced that he had been shot.
Good evening. Dr. Martin Luther King, the apostle of nonviolence in the civil rights movement, has been shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee. Police have issued an all-points bulletin for a well-dressed young white man seen running from the scene. Officers also reportedly chased and fired on a radio car.
I don't smoke, I don't drink, but that night I went out and got myself a filthy liquor and a pack of cigarettes. And I guess I sat by the television all night smoking and drinking. I was wounded, as were many, many, many others.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
That was 45 years ago. Does it still hurt?
It still hurts. We are still looking for, not necessarily another Martin Luther King Jr., but looking for someone who will pick up the mantle and maybe go in a different direction.
We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Dr. William G. Anderson is a doctor of osteopathic medicine with Michigan State University, working at Sinai Grace Hospital in Detroit, and a colleague, associate, and friend of the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Dr. Anderson, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.
Tennessee.